Now, if you turn over to the next page, Colgate University Symposium on Hypnosis, April 1st to 2nd, 1960 in Hamilton, New York, opening address by G.H. Estabrook's chairman. Speakers are E.R. Hilgard, author of the Neo-Dissociation book, which is a foundation of the entire field here, member of the DSM-IV Dissociative Disorders Committee, Ron Shore, frequent co-author with Martin Orne, Gorton, I don't know, Seymour Fisher, I've seen his name going through different stuff, Wolberg, I've seen his name around, behavioral guy, I think, Martin Orne, J.H. Estabrooks, oh, who's that guy? Oh, Milton Erickson, yeah, I've heard of him. So this J.H. Estabrooks is not just some isolated kook, he's a pretty connected in, well-known guy, and all the luminaries in hypnosis in this part of the 20th century know him personally, are corresponding with him on a friendly basis, and are coming to workshops he put on, and publishing in books he's edited. So much for the isolated kook theory. Well, maybe he just kind of was bragging a bit and he wasn't really connected to the military. Well, bad news. A couple pages back, you see on stationery of the War Department Office of the Secretary of Washington, D.C., dated February 20th, 1942, name George H. Estabrooks, Nature of Action, accepted appointment. Expert consultant to the Secretary of War without other compensation, with the payment of actual transportation expenses and not to exceed $10 per diem in lieu of subsistence and other expenses. So he definitely had military intelligence appointment in the Second World War. Turn over the next page. Now we've got Navy Department Naval Research Laboratory, Washington, D.C. From the Director of Naval Research Laboratory to Professor G.H. Estabrooks via Inspector of Naval Material, Syracuse, New York. Subject information on military uses of hypnosis, semicolon, request 4. Enclosed 3 copies of receipt for classified matter and return addressed envelope. 1. The Naval Research Laboratory has received a request for information regarding the possible military uses of hypnosis. This request comes from a naval officer who is primarily interested in hypnosis as a possible facilitator of training, but also wishes to know about any other uses that may have been tested. Members of the psychology branch of this laboratory have discussed the matter informally with several psychologists versed in hypnosis, including Dr. Robert White of Harvard University. Dr. White, which is where Martin Orne did his residency, Dr. White thought that you had done some experimental work on the question during the war and requested that the Naval Research Laboratory communicate with you. If you have done any work along this line, will you please let us know the purpose and results of your investigations? We have been unable to find any mention of such a project in the Washington files of the Armed Services, and so we must trouble you directly for information. Thank you for your consideration of this inquiry. So we know that we've got very secret documents which are not readily available to usual classified military personnel looking through their own filing system. So we know he's not an isolated kook. We know he had a military appointment. We know he's connected in to all the major hypnotists. And we know that he's claiming from 1943 through to 1971 to have created Manchurian candidates successfully for operational use in the Second World War. Is there any other correspondence that might bear on the reality of his claims? Well, there's a whole bunch of correspondence back and forth from spanning the 1930s to the 1960s, that is spanning 4 decades, between him and some guy called J. Edgar Hoover. So you'll see on Federal Bureau of Investigation stationery, July 12, 1939, Dear Dr. Estabrooks, permit me to acknowledge receipt of your letters of June 19th and 27th and July 6, 1939. I read with great interest the hypothesis which you put forth concerning the sinking of submarines. I realize, of course, and this was a military use of hypnosis scheme for sinking submarines, I realize, of course, that you are only suggesting things that could conceivably happen upon the basis of your experiments and the experimentation of others, and you are not suggesting that such a situation actually did occur in any of the recent submarine disasters. 1962. Dear Dr. Estabrooks, your letter of February 27th with enclosures has been received, and it was good of you to advise me of the symposium you have scheduled. I appreciate your inviting us to participate. However, the pressure of official business will not permit me to designate a representative to attend. Now, in between those two letters, there's massive correspondence back and forth between J. Edgar Hoover and Estabrooks. There's visits of FBI personnel to Estabrooks. There's many military and FBI psychological warfare personnel attending various workshops and symposia of Estabrooks, and there's overt discussion of offenses, uses of hypnosis in clandestine operations. So from this, I conclude that probably J. H. Esterbrooks actually did create multiple personality disorder in the Second World War, and an awful lot of people knew about it. Okay, well, maybe it was just G.H. Esterbrooks, and that was the end of the story. We got to have some other body of evidence that indicates that this continued beyond the Second World War. And this is material that's not in your packet, that's from this Operation Bluebird and Artichoke, CIA mind control research from 1951 to 53. And I'm just going to read you some Artichoke and Bluebird documents that I obtained through the Freedom of Information Act. A lot of stuff is whited out, so I'll just say a blank whenever it's necessary to do so. To the files. On 6th April 1954, Tuesday, SI and H, I haven't figured out what SI is, H means hypnosis, experimentation, and research was carried on in Building 13 with the following subjects present: Mrs. Blank, Blank, and Blank, in addition to Messrs. Blank, Blank, and Blank attended in a consultant capacity. One of these misses was age 19, according to the documents. The session opened with a slow induction for all hands and then a subsequent reinduction for Miss Blank to enable her to reconstruct a strange dream she had had the previous week. This was successful, although in the wake state she could remember no details. The major experiment of the evening was then conducted as follows. Miss Blank was taken to room 23 under full hypnosis, and she was instructed by the writer that she would find a secret document in or on Mr. X. His desk in the room. She was told that she was to conceal this document next to her person and then return to room 21, operations room, pour herself a drink of water, which she would find on the bookcase, and stretch out on the sofa, face down, and go into a deep sleep. She was instructed she would not awaken under any circumstances. She was told she would only awaken if someone whispered to her a specific code word and would recall nothing except sleeping on the couch. Blank performed the entire test in exact detail as outlined above and had no subsequent memory whatsoever of any of this activity. During the experiment, Blank was taken to the same room by Blank, and she was told that a person, whom she had never seen, had taken a secret document from the agency. She was told that this person or the suspected person had been given a drug and was unconscious on the sofa in room 21. She was told she was to enter the room and find the document, which would probably be on the person on the sofa. She was given specific instructions that she must locate the document. She was told if she found the document to conceal it on her person and return to room 23, sit in a chair, and go at once into a deep sleep. She was further told she would have no memory of anything except falling asleep. Blank complied in specific detail and immediately discovered the document in Blank's sweater sleeve. Blank concealed the document on her person, returned to room 23, and at once went into a deep sleep. Subsequently, she was brought back into the operations room, and she and Blank were awakened. The experiment was carried off successfully, particularly by Blank, who had entire amnesia for the work and could not even recall it under hypnosis. Blank, however, was able to remember certain parts, although some of her details seemed vague. Okay, here's another separate Artichoke document. Three, agents might be given cover stories while under hypnosis and not only learn them faultlessly, but believe them. Every detail could be made to sink in. The conviction and apparent sincerity with which an individual will defend a false identity given as a post-hypnotic suggestion is almost unbelievable. One's memory for detail under such conditions appears to be boundless. Analogous case number three. A CIA security office employee was hypnotized and given a false identity. She defended it hotly, denying her true name and rationalizing with conviction the possession of identity cards made out to her real self. Later, having had the false identity erased by suggestion, she was asked if she had ever heard of the name she had been defending as her own 5 minutes before. She thought, shook her head, and said, "That's a pseudo if I ever heard one." Apparently, she had a true amnesia for the entire episode. Four, hypnosis would permit the recruitment and handling of high-level political action agents, in particular, under ideal control. Convictions could be reinforced, political courses suggested, appointments influenced, and with a really good subject, only the imagination and skill of the handling operator and the inherent limitations of hypnosis as a technique would limit the possibilities. Double agents could both be discovered and used with much higher degree of assurance if hypnotic control sufficient to permit regression were operative. They could be given suggestions which would have the force of true compulsions to tell of approaches made, targets, briefing, true identity, etc. There is also the possibility that such persons could be used under control much stronger than any we now possessed. And now, so that's experimental use. It's clearly creation of Manchurian candidates. There's no question whatsoever. This is now operational use on the United States. Two, director of security. This is not Manchurian candidates, but it's use of sodium amethyl and hypnosis for creation of amnesia barriers and insertion, deliberate insertion of false memories. Two, director of security via deputy director of security via chief security research staff from Blank. Subject, report of artichoke operations 20 to 23 January 1955. Between Thursday 20 January and Sunday 23 January 1955, the SO, which means Security Office Artichoke Team, conducted a special operation, blank. In the opinion of team members and participating case officers of the blank, the artichoke operation was successful. Details follow. It should be noted at this point that because these operations were the first artichoke operations undertaken in the United States, which is a violation of the CIA's charter, the full names of those participating are omitted from this report and will not be revealed without consent of the Security Office. First names, titles, or pseudonyms will be used throughout this report. In view of the highly sensitive nature of the artichoke techniques, and in view of the fact that this was the first artichoke operation carried out in the United States, the operation was conducted blank. This safe house is far removed from surrounding neighbors in a large tract of land and is thoroughly isolated. A limited and security-cleared household staff maintained functions of the house, and messing was by unwitting blank. Actual artichoke operations were, as usual, carried out in a special area on the second floor of the house, and neither the household staff nor the blank were permitted in the area during any of the processing. SSD division furnished one security officer during the entire period of the operation to act as special guard and to handle any unusual situations which arose during the operation. This guard is hereinafter referred to as blank in this report. For matter of record, it should be noted that the subject was not a confinement problem and has been at all times fully cooperative. Guard detail was not present in connection with the subject except in a general sense. Technical matters in the case were handled entirely by the TBPSD under the personal supervision of blank. Full tape recordings were made of the entire case, and tapes are to be turned over to the participating division in the immediate future. It should be noted that during this particular operation, a special device was used in conjunction with the recording. This device, which is easily concealable, worked with remarkable efficiency, and at no time during the entire recording was there any break due to technical failure. It should also be noted that a complex two-way transmitting receiving unit was again used in this artichoke operation. Cover for the actual operation followed standard procedure. The subject was informed in general terms that before being sent for further work, it was necessary that certain tests be made on him physically and psychologically for our protection as well as his. Hence, a complete physical and psychiatric psychological examination was required. The subject readily accepted this medical cover, and the artichoke technique was introduced easily and with full consent of the subject. The case. Prior to the actual commencement of artichoke operations, a number of conferences had been held with the various participating personnel involved. All hands had been briefed and procedures had been worked out. A general time schedule was prepared and operating instructions for artichoke were issued. On the afternoon of 20 January, the subject and case officer blank, they were met blank of the interested division. Under a covert car, subject was taken to the blank, arriving there at approximately 9:30 p.m. Prior to this, that is during the day of Thursday, 20 January, the technical equipment had been checked out and installed, and blank had arrived at the covert area at approximately 8 p.m. for operational purposes. By previous arrangement, the blank was picked up by blank at approximately 9:30 p.m. Blank was brought to the safe house at 10:50 p.m. Shortly after the arrival of blank, a preliminary conference began at approximately 11:10 p.m. with the subject. Interrogation lasted until 12:25, when all except the subject blank left the operations room. Tape recording was cut off at this time. As a result of this interview, blank stated that the subject's mental and physical condition was good, and noted that the pulse, which is actually the blood pressure, at 12:25 p.m. was 120 over 80. So these guys are not total wizards. The doctor also commented he had noted an increased amount of talk after a drink of whiskey, and although there was some nervousness present, it was not excessive. Blank stated he had given subject 2 grams of pentobarbital to use in assisting the subject to sleep, and it was later confirmed the subject had taken these prior to going to sleep. Half paragraph is whited out. Because of this successful penetration, and because of the extremely high quality of information with the subject, which the subject was obtaining, the case is regarded as most sensitive and important by the participating division. Since the subject's information had been checked and cross-checked many times by the operating division's case officers, and division was of the uniform opinion that the subject was fully legitimate and fully cooperating with our efforts, they, however, desired artichoke to give added assurance to the subject's story and to help them determine absolute suitability for further use of the subject in his work. For the record, it should be noted that no polygraph techniques had been applied in this case, since a physical examination in blank by apparently a cleared physician had indicated too much nervousness for successful polygraph testing. Following established patterns and using medical cover as explained above, the blank began the physical psychological examination at 10 a.m. on the morning of Friday, 21 January. This examination continued until 1 p.m. when an hour was taken for lunch. At 2 p.m., blank again continued the general examination of the subject, with blank being used, as before lunch, as interpreter. This examination lasted until 3 p.m., When the blank concluded the first medical session and a portable polygraph was taken in by blank for the purpose of polygraph testing. There's a bunch of blanked out stuff. On Saturday, 22nd January 1955, subject had breakfast with blank at 9:35 a.m. Blank arrived at the safe house, and at 9:45 a.m. blank arrived at 10:35 a.m. The subject, again with blank acting as interpreter, was examined briefly by the blank. At 10:50 a.m., the blank left the operations area and blank began polygraph testing. This examination lasted until 12:37, by when it was concluded. Then it goes on, I'll skip a little bit, about subject was taken into the special operations room with only the blank present, and at 2:36 p.m., the first intravenous infusion began. Slow injections were continued until 2:46 p.m., when the blank signaled that the subject was fully affected by the chemicals, and at this time, special recording and transmitting equipment was brought into the operations room. Also at this time, blank left the room and blank entered. From this point until approximately 4:15 p.m., when the interrogations ended, artichoke techniques were applied. These techniques, which followed a previously agreed-upon plan, were in three stages. A, this is now deliberate implantation of false memories. A fantasy which blank results during this phase were good, and the subject had no control. Time approximately 15 to 20 minutes. B, a fantasy in which blank results were again very good. Time approximately 40 to 45 minutes. C, following development of the fantasies as noted above, the subject was more or less directly interrogated by blank and blank induced in blank. Results only fair, although the subject had little control. Time approximately 15 minutes. Immediately following the conclusion of the artichoke treatments, a general conference was held with all hands present. It was agreed at this time that further artichoke treatments were unnecessary, that results were conclusive, that in view of the subject's importance, additional work with chemicals or with the H technique might possibly antagonize the subject and hence would be unwarranted and unwise. Following the conclusion of the general discussion, all technical apparatus was removed from the premises and all participant personnel except blank left the area after the blank had checked the subject. On Sunday, 23 January, in between 12 noon and approximately 1:30 p.m., the blank returned to the safe house and again re-examined the physical and mental condition of the subject. At this time, the subject reported he had slept fairly well, but he had a persistent headache. The blank pointed out that the headache was a natural consequence of the, quotes, examination, quotes, and it would gradually disappear. In addition, the blank wrote a prescription to be picked up in another name, which was for future use of the subject as a general sedative. At 1:50 p.m. approximately, blank left the safe house and subject was turned over for handling to case officers of his participating division. Conclusions. In the opinion of the artichoke team, the operation was profitable and successful. In this case, the subject was aware that he had been given certain types of solutions, but as to what he had been given or amounts given, he had no knowledge. Checks were made by blank, and later blank apparently indicated that the subject, although not having specific amnesia for the artichoke treatment, nevertheless was completely confused and memory was vague and faulty. This vagueness and failure of memory was intensified by the blank explanation that the subject had been dreaming, an opinion which it appears the subject shared, at least in part. So that's obviously operational use of sophisticated mind control, amnesia-inducing, and false memory implanting techniques in the United States in the 1950s by the CIA. As part of a broad program of mind control research, experimentation, and operational use, which included the creation of Manchurian candidates. So this is why I say that I conclude that it's an established fact that the CIA and the military have been creating Manchurian candidates for operational use since the Second World War, at least into the 1950s, and that it's not plausible denial in my mind to claim that it all stopped in 1973. Okay, so how did this whole network get constructed, and how does it work, and how is it supported? Well, we're going to take several steps beyond Oliver Stone in terms of level of conspiracy theory, but that's not the point of the talk. The conspiracy theory is interesting to get into, but what I actually believe is that there isn't a conspiracy. I think that the intelligence community is itself a polyfragmented entity with DID, and that there is no single executive host function, and that there is no little room where everybody's got it all planned out and under control, that it works as sort of a neural network with no executive host function, and that these old boys talk to these old boys who know this, who don't know this, who know that. So it's this kind of network model, and that's what you see in this slide. And all these slides are going to look like this. So I'm going to walk you now through all of the interconnections in this network, as I said, all of which are documented, and tell you about some of the history, and talk about some of the ethical problems that arise. So as a matter of general background now, this slide is called Funding Fronts for CIA Mind Control Research. MKUltra, you've already seen, was from 1953 to 1963. The major funding fronts for MKUltra were the Human Ecology Foundation that Carl Rogers was on the board of, the Josiah Macy Jr. Foundation, and the Geschichter Fund. Charles Geschichter is one of the MKUltra contractors himself. So what would happen is the CIA would have its budget. It would pop money over the Human Ecology Foundation. The Human Ecology Foundation would put out a call for grants, and people would then submit applications. So it looks like a normal funding foundation. And some people were, as I said, were unwitting and just thought they were applying for a grant. And other people knew perfectly well that it was a front. The technical term for these kind of fronts is a cutout. So Human Ecology, Josiah Macy Jr. and Geschichter were CIA cutouts. Now, this Geschichter Fund was interesting. One of the MKUltra projects that they funded was construction of the Gorman Annex George Washington University Hospital in Washington. And since they're, you have to remember that the military and the CIA are federal bureaucracies. So you anticipate the behavior of federal bureaucracies in general when you're looking into their history and operations. So what they did was, they through MKUltra, they funded to Geschichter, who then funded out to the contractor, money to build the Gorman Annex as an addition to the hospital. Since this was money coming from a private foundation, it generated matching funds from another sector of the federal government. So the CIA got to double its budget by sucking money out of unwitting civilian areas of the federal purse. What was the Gorman Annex for? It was for mind control chemical experimentation on terminal cancer patients. Three career officers, CIA biochemists, were employed at the Gorman Annex under full cover. This is not really completely above board in ethical behavior. So Carl Rogers is on the board of the Human Ecology Foundation, is himself an MKUltra contractor, and his specific project, so I've got his MKUltra grant application, I've got him on the board of the Human Ecology Foundation, I've got the description of the project that was funded through MKUltra, and I've got the publication flowing from the project that exactly matches the grant application, and in the published paper, he acknowledges funding by the Human Ecology Foundation. So it's a completely documented closed loop. Okay, Josiah Macy Jr. Foundation. Who is on the board of the Josiah Macy Jr. Foundation? An interesting fellow named Daniel X. Friedman. Daniel X. Friedman was the editor of the Archives of General Psychiatry from 1970 until his death in 1993. The Archives of General Psychiatry is the most referenced psychiatric journal in the world by far. In other words, if you do citation index searches of references of psychiatry papers in published psychiatry papers, that is, it's an indexing of the publications in all the psychiatry journals in the world, the number of references to articles published in the Archives of General Psychiatry is seven times, if I have the number right, the next psychiatry journal in the world. So this is the number one great big place to publish. It's very biomedical reductionist, and it's virtually impossible to get a dissociative paper published in there. So these people, like Daniel Friedman, who are in network, are incredibly influential, powerful, controlling people in terms of the history of psychiatry, what gets funded, what gets reviewed, what gets published, who gets appointments, etc., etc., etc. It's all part of a very tight power structure network. Okay, now MKUltra connects us up to Alan Dulles, which connects us back to Human Ecology, over to Harold Wolff, and back to Alan Dulles. How does that work? Alan Dulles was the director of the CIA from 1953 to 1961. He's the longest running tenure as DCI, Director of Central Intelligence. In the Second World War, he was employed by the OSS, Office of Strategic Services, which was the precursor of the CIA, which was run by a guy called Wild Bill Donovan. And he was stationed in Switzerland and was heavily involved in, obviously since the enemy was the Germans and the Allies were the Russians, in the war he was supposed to be working with the Russians against the Germans, which he did. However, when you read the history of the OSS in the Second World War, in the last years of the war, the Cold War was already being deliberately planned out and set up by the intelligence agencies. And it was already apparent to the intelligence agencies that things are going to flip. That Germany would become the allies and the Russians would become the enemies. And there's an awful lot of jockeying about whether the Germans were going to surrender in North Italy before the Russians got to Yugoslavia. And so there's now negotiations with the Germans that if they agreed to surrender early before the Russians got there, then there would be such and such a payoff, which would secure the area for the Allies so that it wouldn't be taken over by the Russians. So there's all this jockeying going on, and all this intrigue and communication between the OSS and some of Hitler's generals. The arch-enemy spy master that Alan Dulles was fighting against was Reinhard Gehlen, who is head of German intelligence in the Eastern Front, which means Russia. At the end of the Second World War, Alan Dulles recruited Reinhard Gehlen to become the head of that division of the CIA's operations against Russia. This is a totally established fact. Harold Wolff is a guy who is the head of the Human Oncology Foundation, who is a neurologist at Cornell. When Alan Dulles' son received a head wound in the Korean War, he was brought back to the United States and treated by Harold Wolff. So you start to get a feel of why I call this an old boys network. Okay, let's come down here. We're MK Ultra and we're over at hallucinogens. So there's a lot of MK Ultra sub-projects that had to do with funding LSD and other hallucinogen research. A person who did hallucinogen research and published a lot of hallucinogen research was Daniel Friedman. Hallucinogen research also connects us down to Loretta Bender. So Loretta Bender is a much revered author of the Bender Gestalt. Now look at these three names: Loretta Bender, Paul Hawk, and Ewan Cameron. You'll see that each of these names, wait a minute, we're missing. And you imagine what it's like for my secretary trying to make these slides. They're all supposed to connect to the American Journal of Psychiatry obituaries. Ewan Cameron had his obituary in the American Journal of Psychiatry. Paul Hawk had his obituary in the American Journal of Psychiatry. And Loretta Bender had her obituary in the American Journal of Psychiatry. So these are revered people who are being honored posthumously by the flagship journal of the American Psychiatric Association. And it's actually Stella Chess who writes the obituary for Loretta Bender. Very glowing, what a wonderful contributor to child psychiatry, what a pioneer. Well, she forgot to mention in the obituary that in a publication that I have in my Loretta Bender file that I got out of the medical school library, Loretta Bender describes giving 150 micrograms of LSD per day to children aged 7 to 11 years of age for days, weeks, months, and in some cases even years in a row. And this is discussed at a CIA-sponsored symposium on LSD. This would not get through an ethics committee.
That's all the time we have. Stay tuned next week for part two of the lecture by Dr. Colin Ross in this radio series on mind control in Canada. You've been listening to The International Connection on CKLN 88.1.